all rise when we see everyone else.
Are you doing the Draco intent?
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome, everyone. Welcome. It's just 6:37-ish. So we're going to... he's trying to get your attention. We're going to get started here. We know that the hockey game with a 6 o'clock start is on everyone's minds. Have no fear. You will get updates of the score, I'm sure. When there's cheers from the galley or hisses, it'll become very clear. So,
Montreal just scored.
There you go. See, this is what I mean. So what you're going to experience today is kind of an anachronistic trial. Everyone knows the story of how David slew Goliath, and we're going to conduct a trial, as you've heard, a trial of David to see if he's, let's say, legally culpable for his actions in a way in which he may have to be punished, legally punished. We have several volunteers who have offered to help. Lauren Goldstein is a defense counsel usually in town, but for now he's going to be prosecuting David. Solomon Friedman is also usually a defense counsel and is also today a defense counsel. So if anyone's ever charged with a crime and needs good lawyers, you know who to come to. It's these gentlemen here. Tamara Skorowski, family law lawyer, is our court clerk. I'm a lawyer. My name is Adam Aftowitzer. And we have two other judges, Victor Rabinovich and Stephen Binman, neither of whom are actually lawyers, but will...
Stephen thinks.
which may mean they're better at dispensing justice. We'll find out. So one of the things that we wanted to do here was give people a chance to learn a little something and have fun while doing it. And we're hoping that you'll learn two things, one of which may be some of the... variances in the story of David and Goliath that you perhaps didn't know before, and you may also learn a little bit about how our court system operates. Now, this is not a typical court experience, but it's pretty close. So we'll hopefully you'll get something out of it that way, and hopefully it'll be a lot of fun while we do it. So I'm going to bring out David, and then we'll be able to get started. David? Oh, and of course, David is played by our own Rabbi Gallendauer. Please, David.
Just fist bump.
Really?
All right. Oy vey, the court is now in session. The Court of King's Bench is now called to order. Chief Justice Victor Rabinovich of the Tribe of Zebulun, Justice Stephen Binman of the Tribe of Gad, and Justice Adam Aftowitzer of the Tribe of Benjamin presiding. In the matter of David and the King, is the accused present?
Yes.
Representing the Crown, Lord Goldstein of the Tribe of Issachar, and defending the accused, Solomon Friedman of the Tribe of Levi. We now begin the concluding portion of the arguments.
Please note in the record, I am from half the tribe of Menasheh, and I'm a Levi. You?
Benjamin.
We have heard considerable testimony, and at this point I will be reading out a statement of facts. This statement of facts has been set down in the ancient language of the Israelites, but it has been translated into our vernacular. But I would stress that both the Hebrew and the English texts are admissible in this court. I will read extracts from the fact statement, after which the learned attorney from the Crown will have the opportunity to summarize his arguments, and the learned attorney for the accused will have his opportunity as well to address the court. And now the summary. The Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled in Sochal in Judah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the valley between them. A champion named Goliath came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits, which we agree is slightly over 9 feet. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore armor of bronze. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels, which we agree is about 15 pounds. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." And I might point out to learned counsel that this translation in the vernacular of subjects is also treated in ancient Israel as in ancient Hebrew as avadim. And avadim, as you know, has a stronger connotation than subjects. Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Now David was the son of Jesse, Yishai, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. And Yishai had 8 sons. Yishai's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to the war. David was the youngest. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and took his stand. And Yishai said to his son David, "Take this roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers, and take along these 10 cheeses. These must have been French cheeses, according to council.
Camembert.
Cold camembert.
Oh, goodness. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are." Early in the morning, David loaded up and set out as Yishai had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going to its battle positions, shouting their war cry. David left his things with the keeper of supplies. He ran to the battle lines and asked his brothers how they were. As David was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. David heard it. When the Israelites saw the man, they all fled in great fear. David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger and he asked, "Why, David, have you come down here? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant, I myself, will go and fight him." And Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine. You are only a young man. He has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear. David, do I quote you correctly?
Don't answer that.
Are you paying attention? The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. And then David took his staff in his hand. He chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine kept coming closer to David. He looked David over. He saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome.
And how?
Now it's how.
And Goliath despised him. He said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Do I quote you correctly?
You don't have the right to silence in this country?
As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly forward to the battle line. He reached into his bag, taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down to the ground. And so David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran, stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword. He drew it from a sheath. And after he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. And when the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. And then the men of Israel and Judah pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Sha'arim road. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp. David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. He put the Philistine's weapons in his own tent. As Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine, he said to Avner, the commander of the army, Avner, whose son is that young man? And Avner replied, as surely as you live, your majesty, I do not know. As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Avner took him, brought him before Saul, with David still holding the Philistine's head. Whose son are you, young man? Saul asked him. And David said, I am the son of your servant, Yishai of Bethlehem. And here ends the record of the discoveries and the summary of the information that this court has before it. Call upon the learned attorney for the crown to summarize for us why the accused should be considered guilty by the jury of the heinous crimes of which he is accused.
Counsel, before you begin, as you're aware, counsel, there is another David and Goliath battle going on at the Canadian Tire Centre today, and I wondered if any of you will be seeking an adjournment in this matter.
Yes, yes.
Justice will not wait.
And I refuse to confirm or deny any rumors about my client's allegiances with regard to the Montreal.
The trial will pursue its just course, and then the accused shall be hung.
May I interrupt, before you begin? if people at the front have difficulty hearing, feel free to sort of move around to see better or hear better, as the case may be. Sorry, counsel, go ahead.
Nice tie.
Thank you. Good evening, justices of this high court, ladies and gentlemen of the gallery, of the jury, members of Young Israel and of Ottawa, people who've wandered in from the movie set next door. My name is Lauren Goldstein, and I am King Saul's chief prosecutor. It is therefore my privilege to represent the king, and by extension the entire Israelite people, in the prosecution of this man, this Habs lover. David Benchester.
I thought we were on the same team.
Now
we're wearing the same colors.
Speak through counsel. Speak through counsel.
You have very broad contempt powers.
You have no such powers.
Indeed, insofar as King Saul is anointed and blessed by the Most Holy, and I represent King Saul, and I am doing his divine work, I urge you to remember that in your deliberations. Today I come before you seeking exactly that divine justice for all of us and for the victim, Goliath, for his reputation and for ours. If only this were a case of property or a dispute of land, in such an instance two parties could face one another and through their accounts and their evidence, as though mined from the very ground like gold, could the truth be found, their day in court be fair, and the result just.
If there be gold, please approach the bench and see what transfers are possible.
You have the gold of truth.
Achoo!
Is that spelled with a D or an A?
You have the silver of, can I continue? This man who chuckles. He has denied you the opportunity to hear two parties face one another in court. He has denied this court Goliath's very words. So who is this shepherd boy whose actions take us from our Sunday evening, never to know if Carl on The Walking Dead shall live or shall die? First, I shall tell you what you have done. David has murdered Goliath. Murder, I say, in contravention of section 229 of the Criminal Code. Yeah, look it up. First-degree murder, contrary to section 231 of the Criminal Code. Go ahead. But the Criminal Code, this is a work of man. That man, David, is guilty of murder in contravention of Exodus 20:13. You shall not murder. So saith the divine, so saith we all. For was Goliath not a man? Are not all men created in the image of God? And is it not a sin to do what that man did and defile his image? But I never answered you exactly who this man is. David, the youngest of Jesse's eight sons. Clearly a man who grew jealous in the shadow of his older brothers. Girded thus for revenge since the day of his very bris. As a youth so pathetically in need of approval that he would do anything, up to and including murder. Oh, so happy was he that sunny day when he could take a human life in order to gain the approval of his father. Is this not the oldest story in the book? Is this not the plot of every Tom Cruise movie? And is he a true and loyal Israelite? Ask yourselves, what did he do after this murder? For after he murdered Goliath, did he not flee from his own king, my boss? And did he not seek refuge amongst the Moabites? Did he not arm himself with weapons from, hold on, Ahimelech of Nob, a foreign priest? Did he not gather 600 men in uprising against the anointed king? And finally, did David not join with Achish, the Philistine king of Gath, on whose behalf he harassed and killed Jews like yourselves? Wait, I realize what audience I'm in, just a moment. No, the accused is a traitor to the Israelite people. And in this age of prophecy, I can tell you that I have very good reason to believe. Indeed, with perfect faith, I do believe that David plans to take the throne for himself. He plans to unite the tribes with sword and oppression, and thereafter wage endless war with our neighbors, because it was a peaceful neighborhood before he got there. Indeed, just look at him, gaze upon him, see the wild mane and the crazy eyes behind the Coke bottle glasses. It has been revealed that he will have an illicit and highly improper relationship with the bathing beauty Bathsheba. And when her innocent husband discovers this, poor Uriah the Hittite, and he refuses to assist David in covering up this crime, what will happen to him? He will be sent to his death. The defense, woe be unto Mr. Freedman. Freed, perhaps, from a conscience.
You know him well.
I understood that ad hominem attacks were permitted in this court.
Against him, certainly, no problem.
Ad hominem.
The defense, he may claim that David is a lute player and a poet, but his is not the instrument of music, his is the instrument of war. His poetry is written not in ink, but in blood. Such is the man on trial today. And what of poor Goliath? Gaul, as I like to call him. Well, what do we know about him? We know that Goliath suffered from a disease called acromegaly, a disease caused by a benign tumor. Benign, like that helped him. A benign tumor of the pituitary gland. It results in gigantism. Had there been a WWE back then, he would have had a career. It also results in severely restricted sight and diplopia, or double vision. And that's why Goliath said to David, come to me, for Goliath could not even see him. Goliath also accused David of coming to him with sticks in the plural. Sticks in the plural, despite the fact that David had only one spear, proof positive that poor Gaul had double vision. David, he refused to get so close that the man could even see him properly. In truth, Goliath, he sought to minimize the harm done in the conflict. For was it not his idea to fight one man to one man instead of the bloody battle which would have ensued had the two armies met en masse? Surely the Philistines, with their overwhelming number, would have smashed through the Israelites. By making this a fair fight, Goliath saved countless lives. He was as close to a pacifist as times would allow. Indeed, it's only because of his challenge that we are here today. Goliath was the son of Orpah, the sister-in-law of Ruth, David's own great-grandmother, who I'm sure weeps today. Perhaps there was some familial issue at play here, for did not David's own brothers mock him? What better revenge than to kill a family member? His brothers, they're not laughing now, are they? Jacques, cousin killer.
Et je comprends qu'est-ce que tu dis.
He's not a half fan. He's not a half fan. Relax.
We'll get to your confession in a minute. Goliath of Gath, killed by his own kin, just another victim of the accused's ruthless campaign to rise from obscurity to conqueror, like the Sens. Is it not true that King Saul walked past the boy over and again, claiming not to know who he even was? as David fetched food and water for his family. Oh, how it must have burned in his ears to hear the king speak of him as though a lowly stable boy. Did not his own brothers tell him to go away, go home, away from the battlefield? It must have burned in his soul, if he has one, to be so beneath notice. The blood of the giant would make him famous. No, infamous. But is this murder, you ask? Good question. When the Philistines and the Israelites met that day for battle, both were to produce a champion. The Philistines selected poor, beleaguered, embattled, and diseased Goliath, but none from the Israelites would come forward. Desperate to make a name for himself, David emerged, knowing that another man's death was the only way to rise above his station. And what happens next is how we know it was murder. In general, when people meet and face one another on the battlefield with sword or spear on a fine, clear morning, they may both be said to be equal. Equal in armament, and for merely appearing, equal in bravery. What separates them is only the divine providence and perhaps a good breakfast. That one might live and one might die can never be a criminal matter. But such bravery did not happen here, not on the defendant's part. David was given a sword so that he might fight fairly. Did he take it? No, he rejected it. David was given armor that he might fight fairly. Did he accept it? No, he rejected it. Instead, young and nimble, dressed only in light clothing so that he might be mobile and fast and enact his evil plan. By contrast, as we've heard, Goliath had a bronze helmet on his head. He was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels. Of bronze, and he had a bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels. David stayed out of harm's way, knowing that Goliath could never reach him, denying the great warrior a fair fight. For David did not have the heart of a soldier and a lion, but rather the heart of a coward and a predator. He was a hunter, and noble Goliath, his greatest prey. Goliath stumbled about, unable to even carry his own shield, for we know that a shield bearer had to go before him. In the meantime, youth and vigor, obviously, in the form of David, selected 5 smooth stones.
And attractiveness.
In a what?
Not just youth and vigor, but also cute.
Yeah, I will not lie before King Saul. Moderately handsome. He selected 5.
You know, my wife is here.
Council. Hey, so does she know about Bathsheba?
Order.
Not born yet.
David selected 5 smooth stones from a nearby brook, and as an archer puts bow to string, or a rifleman cocks his rifle, they'll be invented shortly. The killer David put a single stone in his sling, a sling with which he was well practiced, having hunted lions and bears, and now moving on to the greatest prey of all. No more would David hunt animals. This day he played the most dangerous game. This day David was hunting his fellow man. The stone landed exactly where he wanted it, right in his prey's forehead. A debilitating blow meant to kill, indeed intended to kill. Think about that for a moment. Why 5 stones where one would do? Because he knew Goliath was a great man, and he might have to hit Goliath again and again and again to kill him. One cannot temper a sling as one might temper a sword blow. Of course, David needed no nuanced blade, for he had no intention of tempering anything with mercy. His sole purpose was to kill, to murder. 5 tiny missiles launched with unerring accuracy by a practiced arm from a coward's distance. who do we know that launch missiles and rockets from a safe distance? One man.
Council, have they been invented?
This is up for debate. One man with a surreptitiously concealed projectile in his hand against one man burdened by his dedication to noble tradition. This was no fair fight, this was an execution. And should that not be enough to confirm in your minds the evil in his heart, there's still more. Goliath fell, and David walked the long walk. For it is written that therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of his sheath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. Now who do we know that beheads the helpless? David took Goliath's own sword and beheaded him. He took the man's own sword. The Philistines fled from this travesty that their eyes should not be polluted by such dishonor. Then and only then did King Saul inquire about the name of his young champion. For David, this was mission accomplished. The murder he had committed cemented him in the history books, and more importantly, in the mind of his king, a king he was about to betray. Perhaps you wonder if the killing blow was the stone and the beheading was just for show. No, although that too would have been a little disturbing. No, according to Pseudo-Philo, after David struck Goliath with the stone, he ran to Goliath before he died, and Goliath said, "Hurry and kill me and rejoice." Remember those words that he said to you? And David replied, "Before you die, open your eyes and see your slayer." The dying declarations of the victim condemned this accused, and his own words sealed his fate. What other conclusion can this court reach than murder? For in law, man cannot consent to his own death. Certainly no law permits such asymmetrical warfare and exploitation of the disabled. No man-made law permits all divine laws. No man-made law may permit that which divine law prohibits. I just scribbled that before back. Thus, there is no other conclusion the court can reach, not if you are to be honest and true. Just so. Now, I know not what defense my learned friend will use to try and shield your eyes from the truth. I am not privy to the workings of his dark soul. But I say this before all of you and all of the people of Israel. The rules of war are not so shabby, nor so weak as to allow for barbarism. If we act as our enemies, then are we not them? When David brought lethal projectiles to a sword fight, he went beyond any agreement and committed murder. This is not Chicago, sir.
Philadelphia.
Out there, here's Jerusalem. When he stood over the still living Goliath, denied him succor, and cut his head from his body, he committed murder. It was planned, it was deliberated, it was carried out with extreme prejudice. Like his murder victim, so too must David be executed by stoning. Before I sit, I must also seek the following ancillary orders. First, the sling must be forfeited to the state. I know well my friend will object, since his website, slingshot.ca, is a pro-sling advocacy site. Nonetheless, this horrible weapon of very slow mass destruction must be forfeited and destroyed. I would also ask for an enhanced victim find searcher. On behalf of King Saul, our anointed leader and first king, I call upon this court to condemn this youth before he fulfills his destiny and kills again. When he is put to the stone, it will be bittersweet, for death is always bitter, but justice is in equal parts sweet. I stand now for whichever intelligent questions you can come up with.
Only intelligent ones?
Or? Yes, only intelligent ones. You can ask the others to solve.
Thank you, counsel.
Members of the jury that we face, all understand that you are weighing this information and that we at this high bench, in posing our questions, are merely revealing the faults, the weaknesses, and the ineptitude
of the
Crown Council.
Wait a second.
My learned colleague.
Hold on, I have to bribe all of them now.
I have two questions for you, counsel.
Yeah.
First question, again, as you say, we haven't heard the nature of the defense, but if the defense were to claim this was a matter of self-defense, how would you respond to a claim of self-defense? And my second question for you is... so, self-defense.
Yeah.
My second question is, Anderson or Hamburglar?
The first one is easy. What say I to the claim of self-defense? I say the two men met. Thank you. You need the transliteration. THPPT.
That's just the art scroll version. I like it. It's on Sino as well.
Wait, Rash's comments on it. The two men met in battle. Your question is facile. I take no position, although members of the jury may, they are the sweater.
Notice I didn't say cheeseburger.
Yes, I appreciate that. It's a kosher court. Are there other questions?
Question, my learning.
No,
my
justice.
Already, ask a question!
Hold on, you want to speed us up?
I understand from the record, and correct me if I'm wrong, counsel,
yeah.
But I understand from the record that Goliath was hit by the rock, the stone, and fell forward. That's what I understand is in the record. That's correct.
The record reads clearly, the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. And the record continues.
Oh, that's fine. Chief Justice. That's the relevant information.
My problem is this. You know, I'm imagining this, and I noticed counsel didn't bring like a diorama or anything to help us. But
can we act it out?
If David were to, shoot that rock and hit Goliath on the head with enough force, that it should at least stun him, if not kill him, but stun him.
Yeah.
I would imagine Goliath should fall backwards. And this is my question. I'm wondering if there wasn't maybe a second shooter. Forensic evidence, please say something.
Despite the recent movie and the whole Magneto angle, there's two aspects to that. The first is, I understand from some of the research that the word forehead may be a mistranslation, and the blow may actually have occurred at some point on the leg, the biology of which escapes me at the moment, which would be debilitating. So, but that's not the evidence. The evidence that he was hit.
But the leg is covered in a bronze shin pad.
And according to archaeologists, so was the face. Philistine armor had a face covering. So
you're making my case for me, Craig.
Yeah, all we
but
know,
I'll get into that.
All we need to know is that he did something, Goliath's dead as a result of it. Causation is made out, and then his dark soul proves our intent.
But my question is whether or not there's a second shooter. And to this, I bring up another point. In the record, later on in the documentary evidence, the second book of Samuel is the retelling of the Goliath story, and it identifies the perpetrator, the accused, the slayer of Goliath, as a man by the name of Elkanah.
Yeah.
I would imagine...
A nom de guerre.
This whole thing is called Free David. So, can you explain that to me, please?
Yes, the fact that he had multiple identities, along with his multiple personalities, does nothing to free him. The alternate suspect defense, by the way, I've received no notice of. And if he's going to advance it, I would urge it simply be rejected as yet another pathetic plea.
So Elkanah is David, is what you're saying?
I'm saying Elkanah is David, David is Elkanah. The two men are stripey over there.
And Goliath is Goliath.
Goliath is Goliath.
Fine, I understand.
Counsel.
Yes, Chief Justice.
My Lord Chief Justice.
There's only one lord.
The
stone sank into his forehead and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him.
Like a sniper.
It says clearly that he was dead before his head was removed from the rest of his torso.
Yes.
What happens to your entire argument where you have claimed that he killed him only when he was on the ground?
First of all, it says he came over and he killed him and he cut his head off in at least one translation. It uses the word kill.
There is only one translation.
There is also an original.
Which I read last night. Once